Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Buddhang dhammang sanghang namassami. So tonight being our half moon observance night, Ajahn Yatako asked if I would say a few words for reflection. Apologize a little bit with still going through a bit of jet lag after having returned from 3 weeks in England at our community meetings there, and also having picked up a mucousy cold. So there's a bit of the watery element floating around in my head and sinuses, so not quite fully returned and fully present yet. But thought to try and offer a bit of reflection this evening, maybe just to talk a little bit from some of the themes that came up at the international elders meetings that we just had in England, a gathering of a very large group of monastics from, it was counted, from 29 different countries were represented. 82 bhikkhus we had for the Padimokkha during the meeting, and then a number of other Samaneras, Anagarikas, Sila Dura were all present for some or all of the meetings as well. So it was a really lovely gathering, actually. The theme of it was Samagi, roughly translated as harmony, or harmony, I guess, is the best word. And it was very much that kind of occasion, and true to the Buddha's instructions to meet frequently and come together in harmony, meet in harmony, and disperse in harmony. I think that actually was fulfilled to a very, very high extent there. It was very nice to be part of that. I was reluctant at first to go, thinking, just wanting to feel a little bit more settled here after having been away for the winter and so much going on, but in retrospect, was very glad to have been there. It's been 13 years since I was in England. I spent my third Vasa there at Chithurst mostly. So I hadn't seen the environment, the physical environment of the monasteries, and hadn't seen a lot of the good friends, monks and lay people that I had gotten to know that year. I hadn't seen them for a long, long time. So it's nice to touch base, and then also to see people that I had seen more recently from many different monasteries from around the world. There were a number of themes that came up, but kind of the overarching purpose of the meeting was to just to gather together to reinforce the importance of staying together and staying in some sort of communal harmony, communal understanding of what our practice is all about, how we want to ensure the continuing existence of the Ajahn Chah monastic community. Because it has been so successful in its time since Ajahn Chah formed the monastery at Wat Pa Pong, and then the subsequent creation of many, many branch monasteries in Thailand and eventual spreading to the West, with its continuance long past his passing away. And wanting to understand how that has come to be and how to preserve that and how to keep it going for the long-term benefit of many beings in the future to come. And so a number of issues were put out on the table to discuss, both things that seemed to be challenges to the stability of the community, as well as trying to look at what it, the positive aspects, what it is that keeps the community intact and with a common theme of practice and focus. Mainly, the reason, you know, that we got together was, of course, just to reinforce our relationships with each other, so that as things arise in the future, we feel comfortable talking with each other, being in contact with each other, and developing a sense of trust and familiarity to be able to work through the inevitable challenges that are going to arise. But it did form around a few themes as well that were discussed in various levels of group meetings. I thought just to review a few of those in some way this evening, to tie it into maybe some of the teachings of the Buddha and of Ajahn Chah. I think just maybe to start with some of the more external influences that were discussed along some of the themes, and then to move more to some of the Dhammic or general themes. But one of the challenges that was talked about on a very external level was the growing in the world and a noticeable movement in Thailand in particular, a growing influence of groups, of monastic groups and teachings that are starting to veer away from the fundamental teachings as we know them from the canon, and how practices in the monastic tradition, you know, will change over time, and how to preserve some of the authenticity and of the original teachings that we know of, how to preserve the Dhamma Vinaya as we understand it, and as Ajahn Chah tried to practice and teach as well, in the face of great challenges. You know, as I think we all know, over time, the Dhamma and the Vinaya are expected to deteriorate, decline from its original ways as the effects of time and culture and movement occur, and the influences of attraction, aversion, greed, hatred, confusion take over our minds, even those people who are quite devoted and committed to practicing Dhamma. It's the influence of the unenlightened mind, and seeing how that happens in various forms of our practice and of our communities, and just noticing some of the trends that are impacting, particularly in Thailand, with the propagation of movements and teachings that are well backed by a lot of money and wealth and influence, but are appealing to some of the trends that move away from practice of Dhamma Vinaya as we are used to it in the Ajahn Chah tradition anyway, and wanting to just be wary of that and watch it as it happens, the attraction of fundraising, of accumulation of wealth, of maybe finding teachings that are attractive to large groups of people, and using, in ways, mass marketing ways of influencing people to support those kinds of developments, and the fact that some of that is very strong stuff and very powerful and is having a fairly large influence in Thailand, and is also being imported, exported, I guess, to many countries across the world. So there was a bit of discussion, quite a bit of discussion around that, and just wanting mostly to make all of us aware, aware of that, and ways of wanting to, you know, appropriately draw attention to that, and take whatever measures we can to help provide a clear and present alternative to those influences for people. So that was discussed to some degree as one of the challenges facing our communities. And in other ways, also just wanting to really emphasize and preserve the way that Ajahn Chah felt it was good to follow the Vinaya. That was talked about. The fact that not just in Thailand, but in most monastic cultures, Buddhist monastic cultures around the world, that there were actually very few groups of monastics who were following the Vinaya very closely, and that even things like the handling of money or the renunciate precepts are very, very rarely practiced anymore these days, except within some of the forest traditions of which we are a part. And just the importance of maintaining that sense of that standard of Vinaya practice was considered to be a hallmark that we wanted to emphasize and remember very strongly and reinforce and hold to throughout our communities, and to be very cognizant of the trend away from that, even in some of the communities that traditionally held to those standards. But to uphold and maintain that sense of a real common commitment to a very high standard of Vinaya practice. One of the other challenges that was talked about in one of the group settings was the influence of technology, particularly the rapid development and use of information devices, you know, cell phones, smartphones, computers in general, that kind of high-tech information technology that seems to be, you know, very, very much a part of the world now, and also a growing part of many of monastic life in many communities, and the influence that has. How does that affect our renunciate practice? Are we moving rapidly away from a very simplified standard of living, one that is very much moving towards a lot of stimulation through the use of these kinds of things? So that was made a topic of discussion, and there was not a lot of there was a lot of different widely ranging opinion about the appropriateness and how it should be used, but generally speaking, a number of the younger Teras were concerned with the effect that it seemed to be having in the communities, the increased use of particularly, and it seemed to be actually more of a concern, interestingly enough, in Thailand, because in the West there seemed to be a fair amount of understanding of the need for restraints on the use of these on the use of this technology, particularly for junior members of the community, and almost all communities had restrictions on internet use and the use of personal devices. With more of the senior members in the Western communities having access to them, But in Thailand, apparently, it's a bit harder to regulate because the culture is so strongly influenced and by the proliferation of devices like this, and even trying to enforce it in the monastic community apparently is very, very difficult. Even at places like Wat Pa Pong, Wat Pa Nanachat, that have very strong standards, it's a very strong influence. So it was quite a topic of discussion, and following big range of comments ranging from they should be completely banned to how useful they were for particularly many of the senior monastics in terms of increasing the efficiency of their work and actually lessening the amount of time they had to spend doing administrative duties. So no conclusions were drawn along those ideas, but the concern was very much present and noted and discussed. Acknowledged as an influence, a fairly strong influence in our tradition. So those were just a couple of the more external kinds of issues that were brought about and discussed within the communities. The primary focus of the discussions and the initial one that was started out with was around just how to preserve the Ajahn Chah legacy. What was the Ajahn Chah legacy? You know, what were the fundamentals that he talked about and focused on that we can point to and say this is a core aspect of what it is that we want to preserve in all of our communities. And a number of the Dhamma talks that the senior monks gave over that week were also centered around different people's experiences of what the Ajahn Chah legacy meant. So it was a very rich time to see the different aspects of his teaching that people picked up on and felt were essentials. Ajahn Sumedho gave a very lovely talk on the evening that he gave a talk, basically expounding on his often expounded on theme of the Four Noble Truths and pointing out that Ajahn Chah structured much of his teaching around the Four Noble Truths, and that Ajahn Sumedho gave one of his very classic and very strong teachings around just that, what we would call the basic teaching of the Four Noble Truths, which is actually much more than basic, it's very comprehensive. And I was reminded of that a bit as we were doing some of the chanting tonight from the Dhammacakka Sutta and going through the Four Noble Truths and the 12 aspects of them, because that's often a theme that Ajahn Sumedho teaches from to very good effect, and reflecting a number of the themes that Ajahn Chah often brings up. And the one that kind of hit me tonight as a very important aspect and one that Ajahn Chah would expound on in many different ways was around the second noble truth, the truth of the cause of suffering. The truth being tanha, that truth of the cause of suffering being tanha, the craving for sense pleasure, the craving for existence, and the craving for annihilation. And it also reminded me of a teaching that, or a phrase that's often found in the suttas that points to the kind of two fundamental obstructions that we face as human beings and that keep us circling in samsara, and that's the Buddha's teaching, very powerful teaching of the fact that for in uncountable eons, for a unfathomable amount of time, beings have been roaming and wandering through samsara. They've been fettered by craving and obstructed by ignorance. So these two aspects, craving and ignorance, fettered by craving, obstructed by ignorance, these are the fundamental qualities that keep us bound in samsara, keep us wandering aimlessly over and over through lifetime after lifetime. And the teachings that Ajahn Chah would often talk about would center around these two themes. He spent a tremendous amount of his teaching time talking around right view, how to release ourselves from the grip of ignorance, from the obstruction of ignorance, by constantly focusing on the aspects of anicca, dukkha, and anatta, seeing conditioned world in through that lens of Dhamma, through the lens of wisdom, constantly reminding ourselves of the transiency, the unsatisfactoriness, and the not-self aspects of all conditioned phenomena. And that formed a basis for his teaching on how we should just constantly remind ourselves to view our experience, review the world. But also, when it comes down to the actual practice, the actual training, the day-to-day living of our lives, how important it was to focus on the aspect of seeing how craving, clinging, form the basis for the actual how we suffer, how it is that we suffer. And to slowly become aware of that and to discover alternatives to those habitual ways of working in the world. One of the phrases that the Buddha also talks about and was a reflection, a question that he posed to himself as he was starting to understand the Noble Truths before his enlightenment, and was realizing the nature of suffering and the force of craving and its role in that. Was the question he would pose to himself was, is what is it that when I do it will lead to my long-term happiness, not just a short-term fix, realizing that the force of craving was the way that we usually try and find happiness in the world, through temporary pleasure, temporary becoming, temporary avoidance of unpleasantness. And what is it that actually will lead to a long-term happiness rather than the short-term happiness that following these impulses usually results in? So that formed the basis for his search, and led to the discovery of the path that he then taught. And I think that's an important way that we can focus, and it was the teachings that Ajahn Chah expounded along those lines that formed the basis of much of his teaching to the monastic community and to the lay community into how to deal with the craving that causes us to be fettered by all of these old habits. And a lot of the teaching that was given during the course of that meetings, particularly there were two, one from Ajahn Liam and one from Ajahn Pasano as well, that focused on the way that Ajahn Chah instructed people to deal with these forces of mind on a regular daily basis, through not only the monastic discipline, which of course formed the core basis for our life, following that very closely, using that as a mirror for our lives, but in what also are termed the Apanaka Dhammas. Both of them spent an evening discussing these core teachings of Ajahn Chah, who really emphasized this kind of daily life application of the teachings. So the three Apanaka Dhammas being moderation in eating, devotion to wakefulness, and sense restraint. And that these form the basis for developing a sensitivity and a peace of mind that can then see clearly and go further into meditation and investigation of the aspects of the teaching that then will help us shatter the veil of ignorance. But how important it was to keep these fundamental teachings at the core of our lives, at the core of our practice. and talked, you know, fairly extensively about these. And just to remind people of a few of those teachings, the aspect of wakefulness, devotion to wakefulness. If we keep our energy moving towards practicing the Dhamma, keeping ourselves focused, trying to put forth effort rather than allowing ourselves to settle into dullness, that kind of energy and effort will help sustain us over a long period of time. The moderation in eating, how easy it is as monastics to get attached to one of the few sensory pleasures that's left to us in the world, and how attention to that form of that avenue for craving is very important, to use the aspect of nourishment as the basis for our deciding how much to eat, and when to stop. Really tuning into the process of while we're eating, really noticing more than the taste and the pleasure of eating, but noticing the effect on our body, when it is that's appropriate to stop, when have we had enough, so that we can keep our energy high and avoid the drowsiness and continue to practice clearly and with a heightened alertness throughout the day. That, as simple as they sound, and as so many times, oftentimes that we've heard it, how important those aspects of the training are, and that we have to remind ourselves of them over and over again. And then the aspect of sense restraint, and being very clear about what Indriya Sangwara, sense restraint, is all about. That it's not a avoidance of being engaged with the world, but it's learning how to wisely engage with the world so that we don't get trapped into the aspects and features of sensory contact that impel us towards greed or aversion, that we see things more in their elemental nature, seeing things, seeing forms, hearing sounds, experiencing tastes and smells and tactile sensations, without attending to the aspects of them that are provocative of lust or desire or aversion. So it's seeing them in a clear way, and noticing, particularly noticing the effects that our attention has in our minds. So if we find ourselves moving into delusion or attraction, aversion, through inappropriate attention to the world around us, then we know we're not seeing things clearly and that we need to refocus our efforts to attend to things wisely, seeing the unattractive in the attractive, or seeing the just the neutral aspects of experience, different sensory stimulations in their truthfulness, in their in actually how they are, rather than colored by how we would like them to be. So this aspect of seeing things clearly, of sense restraint, as we move through our daily life, was a core teaching of Ajahn Chah, and was emphasized really strongly as a way of helping to preserve those teachings. The best way of preserving the teachings of Ajahn Chah was to put them into practice. That was emphasized a lot by many of the teachers during that week. There was an appreciation for the amount of study that seemed to be going in people's lives these days, attention to some of the aspects of learning the Pali Canon and the suttas. But caution was also exercised along those lines. Some people felt there was a bit of a too much emphasis on that, particularly in some of the Western communities, and kind of almost sometimes a competition was mentioned for you know, knowledge and being able to intelligently quote suttas and present different kinds of arguments, pros and cons, and people were saying that as good as it is to know the suttas, that using them in that way, and particularly to the avoidance of actually practicing, was a concern in some people's minds. So really re-emphasizing Ajahn Chah's emphasis on knowing what needs to be known in terms of the practice, but putting down the books and really practicing in a daily life through the service to the community, through the following of the precepts, through the use of the Apanika Dhammas, and the devotion to finding quiet ways to practice meditation and to spend our days skillfully in actually putting the teachings into practice, not just talking about them. So those were a lot of the themes that came up in the teachings as ways to preserve the legacy of Ajahn Chah. I think overall, though, the biggest thing I came away from, and I think many people did as well, was just the sense of how important it was just to be there for each other. The challenges to maintaining a community standard in such a diverse community spread really over the world was the challenge was was recognized as really high, and a lot of the emphasis was put for that week on not only meeting together to discuss these kinds of things, but just to spend a lot of time with each other in informal settings, taking walks together, having tea, catching up on what people were up to in their various communities, the challenges they were facing, the good things that were happening, and really finding ways to support each other and be there for each other. There was a lot of emphasis on how to just be with each other and develop a sense of kindness and caring. Some of the discussions were around what do we do as we get older? How are we going to look after each other? What not only in practical ways, but really developing that sense of commitment to each other as brothers and sisters in holding together a very important teaching, very important training, and ways to just meet each other on a very heartfelt level. So just the time of hanging out with each other and taking long walks and offering kind words and encouragement, discussing the various issues and problems was in itself, I think, a major part of how people felt it was important to keep the community together and alive, knowing that there's going to be challenges coming up in the future that we really can't foresee, and that there may not be easy answers to or policies that can be set up to enforce, you know, in a worldwide community, in a diverse worldwide community, that more important was how it is that we can just be here for each other. There were just so many instances of people asking how other members of the community who weren't present at the meetings, how people were doing, concern for just the growth and the sustenance of this kind of fragile existence in the world. So that was all very heartening for me to see happening. On, you know, I've always had an appreciation for our community here, to Bayagiri, the level of sensitivity and harmony that we have here, and the caring aspects of how we look after each other. And I was very pleasantly surprised to see that that was a real common interest and a common theme of all the people that were there, and to see that interest and level of commitment to Sangha was something that was very strong in almost all the communities that were represented. So it gave me a sense of uplift and confidence that even if I were to go to other places in the Ajahn Chah tradition, that these same values would be here to tap into, would be for us all, available for us all. So all in all, I guess I would say that it was a very, you know, useful time, a great experience. It's planning to happen again in another 3 years or so. I think if the community in England agrees, Amaravati is probably going to be where it's going to happen again. Ajahn Amaro did such an incredible job of organizing it with the help of course, and many people there as well, and was really instrumental in making it such a successful endeavor. So there's a lot of appreciation that we all had for his efforts in bringing it together. And I think as reports filter out, you'll probably hear similar themes of appreciation expressed from other people who were there as well. So that's just a little bit of a highlight summary of what happened, and I think I'll leave it there for this evening. Sadhu Karanta Dhamma Se Sadhu.